We discussed the whole history, how we understand what a prophet is, and the book of Joshua. We discussed the history of the world. Remember, creation, 10 generations to Noah, and the flood, 10 generations to Abraham. Abraham is born in the year 1948. We go down to Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. We go down to Egypt. We spend 210 years in Egypt. We're up to the year 2448. We leave Egypt, 2488. Moshe Rabbeinu dies, and Yeshua takes over. We mourn Moshe for 30 days. Before Moshe dies, he asks Yeshua, any questions? Yeshua says, I think I got it. In heaven, they hold it against him. What do you mean you think you got it? You have your Rebbe, you don't ask him questions? 30 days of mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu. During those 30 days, Joshua doesn't talk to anyone but two people. He takes two people aside, Kalev bin Yefune, or Ben Chetron, and Pinchas ben Elazar, the descendant of Aaron the Kohen. And he sends them into Israel as spies. He doesn't consult with anyone. He tells them, while everyone's mourning, you guys go in there, dress yourself up as though you are potters, and go spy out the land. Come back and give me word what's going on. Notice the difference. Originally, when we sent spies under Moshe, there were 12 spies. No tribe trusted the other tribe. Everyone wanted their representative. Originally, they were messengers of the people. Here, they were messengers of the leader. Here he chose one of them had been into Israel already. Remember, this is Kalev's second time in. And Pinchas was known as the zealot. They go in quietly. He's not talking to anyone. The two go in to spy. Everyone's busy mourning. The 30 days of mourning are up. And the Jewish people quickly start to review the Torah. They haven't been learning as well during these 30 days of mourning. And they start reviewing the Torah and they discover they have forgotten 3,000 halachot. They come to Joshua, and this is Joshua's punishment. When Moshe asked him any questions, and Joshua said, I think I got it. So in heaven, they held that against him. So now Joshua's stuck, and he turns to God, and he says, God, help me out here. And God tells him, and that's the first pasuk, God tells Yeshua bin Nun, second pasuk, Moshe avdi met, my servant Moshe is dead. Don't go asking me for Torah. I gave a Torah. I am not giving anything else from heaven. I don't get involved anymore. Now it's your job. Go work it out. And so Joshua starts scrambling. We need someone to figure out. We lost 3,000 halachos. And Moshe is passing. We'll get back to that. So Joshua is ordered, now it's time to enter the land of Israel. Which sea, which river do we have to cross to enter the land of Israel? The Yarden, the Jordan River. So Joshua is told, Chazak ve'ematz, be strong, have inner fortitude. You will lead the land, you will lead the nation to conquer the land that I promised them. Be strong to ensure they keep the Torah. And you have a commandment here. We have the important commandment in Pasuk Chet. Lo yamush sefer haTorah zeh mipicha. You should never stop learning Torah. Va'agita bo yomam v'layla. The commandment to learn Torah every day, every night, is reiterated in the beginning of the book of Joshua. You have to keep learning it if you want to keep it. If you don't learn it, how are you going to know? How many people know that when you hire a worker to work your vineyard, you have to let him eat from those grapes? It's a mitzvah in this week's parasha. You have to let your workers eat as they're working. There are many mitzvot that people don't even realize exist. So you hired a babysitter. Do you know that you have to pay her that night? It's a biblical commandment. You're not allowed to tell her, I'll get back to you tomorrow. Pay her. You have a mitzvah. Shabbos, good question. So God warns him, be strong, don't be scared. Hashem is with you. Now, Yeshua commands the police to prepare the nation for the great journey. He has 2.5 tribes on the eastern side of the Jordan. Remember, the tribe of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh. They have their lot all around here. It's almost as big as the land of Israel. Remember, before we entered the land of Israel, we conquered that side. There were two nations that attacked us, Sihon and Og. Awesome nations. They were paid by all the nations of Israel. They were paid to fend off any enemy. They trusted them, that no one would be able to pass through them. Even Moshe was scared when he saw them. And God told him, don't worry, I'll help you take him down. So we did. And suddenly we had this huge territory, very fertile, and the tribe of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Manasseh are settled there. They make a deal, we'll go into the land of Israel, help you conquer the land, and then we'll come back. They do a terrible deal. They think they've really gotten a great deal, but they do a terrible deal. What's so wrong with their deal? They forgo the education and the spiritual fortitude of their families for the sake of their money. This is a recurring theme in Tanakh. You see, Abraham and Lot, right? Where are we going to live? Where do you want to live, Lot? Ah, there's good land there. I'll be very rich there. I'll live with the rich. What kind of education will you have? What type of people will you live with? It's one of the greatest challenges the students of Machon Meir have. Because after you study here, where are you going to go live? So living here next to the yeshiva costs a lot of money. And your opportunities might be less. Living in Tel Aviv, you might have greater opportunities. But what spirituality do you have there? What base medrash? What shiurim? Every year we see students who move on, thank God. That's what we want you to do. We want you to take the Torah and apply it in your lives. And then every year we see students who have this challenge, where they're going to live. And it's a very big challenge because there are many temptations. But as you learn Tanakh, you will see that this is a recurring theme. People make the choice. You can see that choice. The Jews who chose to live in all kinds of places on Long Island, and the Jews who went to live in the little shtetl in the Lower East Side, or in Brooklyn, or in Borough Park. Where do the three generations down, where do they end up? That's the big question. You got to think long term when you settle your family. You're not settling for a year. And if all you think about is the money, so then the products are in kind. You really have to think. It's better for a parent to commute every day to his work, but at least his children have an environment that's the correct environment, his family's in the correct environment, rather than he lives next to his job and he has a short commute, but where is he sending his kids? And who are the neighbors and who are the role models? So this is a recurring theme throughout Tanakh, and that's what happens here. The tribe of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Menashe, they have this fertile area. They're really rich. They got a lot of territory, more than any other tribe. But they lose everything. Their children are going to be assimilated, intermarried, ultimately wiped off the face of the earth. They're going to be the first to be exiled. And again, you'll pay attention in Tanakh, you'll see it's a recurring theme. So Joshua calls them in and says, remember the deal, you guys got to come in and help fight the other fight. You can't just take this territory. We all fought for this territory. You promised you'd fight. And they said, for sure, we're going to do whatever you want. And if anyone dares go against what you say, we're going to kill him. You're the leader, you're the boss. And from here we learn the halacha that if someone rebels against the king, they get the death penalty. But they add a clause. They say, Yeshua, if anyone dares rebel against you, we're killing him. Provided that you're strong. Strong in Torah. We're only going to listen to you so long as you're in line with the Torah. If you're off the line of the Torah, forget it. We're not with you. And this line is going to be quoted when our first king, Saul, orders his chief of staff to murder the priests, the Kohanim. He's scared of a rebellion. He doesn't have a real basis for it. And he orders his chief of staff, he says, kill him. And his chief of staff says, no. And he says, but I'm the king. And he says, no, you're not. You're only the king when you're in line with the Torah. When you're telling me to perform a duty that's against the Torah, I don't listen. And his two chief of staffs, his two generals, refuse to murder the Kohanim. He has a third who actually does it. And that's a sin that will tarnish our history for years to come. But the first two generals say, no way. And that's based on this pasuk, that the tribe of Reuven, Gad, and half the tribe of Menashe, they define what it means to have a leader. They say, we will all obey, we will all listen, and anyone who rebels will die, provided that you, the king, are in line with the Torah. And so our two spies enter the city of Jericho. Now I'm going to tell you a secret. It says that the secret to conquering the land of Israel, the key to the land of Israel, is in Jericho. That's why I was devastated when Netanyahu gave Jericho over to the Palestinian Authority. Because the Medrash says that the key to owning the land of Israel is in Jericho. On some spiritual level, Jericho represents the key. Even that when the Talmud wants to tell us how great Jerusalem was in the times of the Temple, it says you would offer the spices in Jerusalem and the goats in Jericho would smell the spices and sneeze. So you could read that and say, interesting, the spices had a smell all the way out to Jericho. Maybe. But maybe it's telling us something else, that connection between Jericho and Jerusalem. And on a different occasion, we have to discuss where the entrance to the Garden of Eden and the entrance to perdition and how they're connected to Jericho and Jerusalem. But that's not for tonight. Back to our story. So they come to Jericho. And Jericho has a wall that is very tall and is as thick as it is tall. Meaning if you'd knock over the wall, it would still be just as high. So there's this huge wall, and it's so big and so wide that people actually have homes within the wall. They have homes carved into the stone of the wall. And there is a woman who is one of the most beautiful women who ever lived in all of world history. Her name is Rachav. Now, we have to appreciate that in the days of Tanakh and also in the days of the Talmud, a woman was considered more beautiful the more corpulent she was. So if a woman is considered a real beauty, you have to imagine her spanning like three rooms, right? She's gorgeous, okay? So at any rate, what's her name? Rachav. What does Rachav mean?
Wide.
Okay. So now, the Talmud says anyone who knew Rachav, anyone who had been intimate with her, and it says kings would come from far and wide. She was a woman of ill repute. Kings would come from all over. She knew everyone. She knew everyone's secrets. She was the favorite. So it says she was so exciting that if you just mentioned her name, a person would spill his seed. That's how beautiful Rachav was. That's what so the Talmud says, one rabbi asked the other one, hey, we just discussed Rachav, right? We said her name, no one here spilled his seed. So he says, right, because you never saw her, so it doesn't mean anything to you, right? But anyone who saw her, that's how gorgeous she was. So obviously she has different passageways to get to her house. All kinds of people don't want to be seen. So they come, and that's the easiest place to come into the city. By the way, our tradition is, the Medrash says she was, the verse says, she was a zona. Zona could mean a woman of ill repute. Commentaries say that zona comes from the word mazon, to feed. So that could still be a woman of ill repute, because it's feeding another need. But it can also be a woman who sold food, who sold bread. Now, why is that important? Because we're going to learn how she does tshuva as she helps the Jewish people conquer Jericho. She turns to God and says, all my life I lived in sin, and now I want to come back to you. And not only does she do tshuva, she becomes so pious that ultimately she will marry Joshua. She will be Joshua's wife. So it's a little bit of a different picture if she was an innkeeper, if she sold, you know, goodies and sweets and cakes. She was a nice old lady, or she was something else, right? Whatever the message, okay, you should just be familiar.
How did she hear of God?
We'll hear that, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Now we're out of time, so next week, Bezrat Hashem, we'll see how she knows about God, etc. That will be next week.